You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. I'm still here. Jordan Bastion is still here. Indians traded away a lot of guys the last couple of weeks, a lot of big moves. And then the offense all of a sudden figured out how to score some runs, JB. The offense goes crazy in the wake of the Swisher and Bourne trades, and of course the Murphy trade and the Brandon Moss trade that preceded it. Who are these guys? What got into these guys over the weekend?
Well, I'm sure it had absolutely nothing to do with the Minnesota Twins rotation. I think the weekend series win over the Twins kind of could go a long way for just that mindset of a team or just that overall morale where, you know, the season hasn't gone the way they want it to go. Obviously, a lot of culture-changing trades and direction-shifting trades happened. A lot of new guys, young guys filling up that room. And, instead of kind of just mailing it in, you know, we kind of saw some camaraderie and fight and some of the things that the Indians have been looking for all year. I thought manager Terry Francona had an interesting quote after the last game against the Twins on Sunday. He said, you know, we seem to be more of a team this weekend than we were all year, the way we were searching. And I thought that was kind of telling for the manager to say that, you know, after they had traded a bunch of guys who were felt to be such big parts of this team. So I think that weekend can go a long way in that room, kind of welcoming in some of the new faces, get them used to their new surroundings, and, you know, maybe breathe some life into the confidence of the hitters, knowing that, you know, they actually can put up runs in bunches. I think that's something they've been looking to do for a long time, and, you know, to back up a starting rotation that's been there all year. The really encouraging weekend, just in terms of the bigger picture, because the season, as we all know, has not gone the way the Indians hoped.
All right, let's delve into this Nick Swisher, Michael Bourne, Chris Johnson swap. And it's been interesting to see some of the reaction from fans and some of the reports out there. It's just, it seems to me, JB, that any evaluation of this trade from a baseball standpoint is almost meaningless because this is a financial move for both clubs, really. It's almost an even exchange of money. I believe the Indians are saving about $4 million on Swisher's deal, if you can call it a deal. And for that, they gained the flexibility immediately in 2016, and they still have some Johnson money on the books for 17. The Braves, meanwhile, are taking on two bad contracts, and then they're free and clear in 2017 when they expect to contend. And that's the basic gist of it. I know it's a complicated deal, but that kind of breaks it down as simply as possible. But the Indians did get a piece back in Chris Johnson, and obviously they hope for bounce-back efforts from him. How does he fit into this thing moving forward in your mind?
Well, first of all, I think you hit on a great point, which is the immediate reaction was to say, whoa, they unloaded those contracts and got all this financial flexibility now. And I really think when you break it down, as you just mentioned, given the amount of money that the Indians, you know, are sending to Atlanta as part of the exchange, is that this is more about roster flexibility than it is financial flexibility of just determining that these guys – were not the players that they thought they were going to be, and they shouldn't be a part of the future if this team wants to have a quick turnaround, which they still think they can with the rotation and the core group that they have in place. But you don't want to be limited with a pure DH, which I think the Indians felt Swisher had become, and you don't want to be limited with this very wealthy center fielder whose defensive metrics had declined, who isn't stealing the bases like he used to, and who all of a sudden is almost a platoon hitter, you know, because he wasn't playing much against left-handed pitching. You know, Bourne had looked great in the second half, and kudos to him for kind of, you know, picking it up after the All-Star break, and, you know, maybe the Braves saw something within that as well. But you're right, this was more about the roster than it was the finances in the big picture. And as far as Chris Johnson goes, I mean, if you're going to get rid of two bad contracts, you're going to have to roll the dice and maybe take one on, and that's exactly what they did. This is a guy that has played third base most of his career, but they have, you know, rookie Giovanni Urshela at third base. So, you know, he's not going to see a ton of time there. As of right now, they have Carlos Santana Jerry Sands getting a look at first base. So he'll mix in at first a little bit, as he did in his first start with the Indians. But he's also expressed a willingness to play some outfield. So if they can get a guy who can be in the lineup, hit left-handed pitching, move around a couple different positions, you know, that gives them some more versatility. And versatility is what Francona really wants with his lineup and with his players. And I think with Swisher and Bourne, that versatility had just disappeared.
It certainly had. And, the Braves' perspective, they're basically $4 million worth of Nick Swisher. You can be worth $4 million. It's the larger yeah. contract that's the issue. So, I don't know. I guess it makes sense for both sides. You can't call it a win for either side because you're in a bit of a hole to begin with, which is why you had to make this kind of move. But obviously the Indians gained that roster spot for next season. They got a little cash to play with out of all these trades. I want to say, I don't know the exact figure, JB. Maybe you do. But it looks like maybe 10 or 11 million bucks in play for next year. I wonder if that helps them at all in free agency. It's not a tremendous amount of money to work with their needs, but it's certainly better than nothing.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not used to sitting down in August and calculating projected payrolls and stuff for the offseason for next year. So I haven't really sat down and gone through that yet. But, you know, if they don't pick up Ryan Rayburn's option, you know, that's another few million that they can have on the books. You know, David Murphy's option is no longer on the table. Brandon Moss's arbitration potential salary is no longer here. And you save some money with DeBorn and Swisher, and Mark Zepchinski was in arbitration again. And then you think of guys like maybe if Lonnie Chisenhall's a non-tender candidate, maybe you're looking at some arbitration savings there, things like that. So they will have some financial wiggle room in the winter to address some needs. But you've got to wonder if the contracts that they gave Bourne and Swisher will kind of scare ownership off of really spending a lot again on some big-time free agents. You know, I think it's still going to be an approach where they're going to have to look to younger, controllable guys who can fill some needs, but at least now, you know, you have some more identifiable holes, and maybe now you can target a little more specifically given that roster flexibility. But I think there will be some financial wiggle room, but unless they really decide to bump that payroll up, which we haven't seen over the last several seasons, you know, I think we're going to be looking at maybe around the same range, but with a little more freedom to do something, which they didn't have last offseason. We've talked about it a lot. They went into last winter with so many contracts just locked in place. It really handcuffed them in terms of how they could upgrade, and that's why you saw very minimal moves to try and upgrade the team. I think now they'll have a little more wiggle room in that regard.
Yeah, you look at this front office has done pretty well in the trade department over the years, and not so much in the big signing department. Maybe the financial wiggle room is used in the midst of a trade to take on some salary.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting way ahead of ourselves. For now, it's the Abraham Almonte era. He was gained in Mark Zepchinski trade and had a really big first weekend with the club. Not his first exposure to the big leagues, but first exposure with the Indians specifically. What'd you see from Almonte?
Oh, man, I think we're just trying to figure out where the statue is going to go. If it's going to go between Tomey and Feller or over by Doby. Man, it was fun. It's fun when you see a guy come in and make an immediate impact. And, you know, obviously in the age of social media, you can have a lot of fun with it and just enjoy it. And I think right now, as mentioned earlier with the weekend series win over the Twins, this team's looking for something to have fun with and smile about and be encouraged about. And while you're not going to sit here right now and say, wow, the Indians won the Zepchinski trade, it was great to see a guy come up, play a good center field. He made a nice leaping catch at the wall. And just, I mean, he had a couple homers. He had a four-hit game. Now, even Chris Johnson came in and had a four-hit game, his first start for the team. So it's nice to see those guys get in, have some success, kind of get the fan base excited a little bit on a couple nights when the stadium was packed because they were having some pretty awesome fireworks shows and other things going on. So it was a fun weekend, and we haven't decided yet what the nickname will be for Almonte. I floated the full Almonte. I know Zach Meisel of Cleveland.com was saying Babraham Almonte. I saw Abe Ruth floating around, so you know we have time to work with it as he becomes a cult hero here in Cleveland.
Absolutely, and hopefully it's a cult standing that lasts longer than, say, the Jerry Sands cult standing. where it goes moving forward. Hey, it's a small thing this weekend, but maybe a meaningful thing. Michael Brantley's change in lockers. And we talked on this podcast a couple weeks ago. We had Andre Knott on about the leadership in the clubhouse or maybe even lack thereof. And, you know, something like that doesn't happen by accident when a move, especially in the Terry Francona clubhouse, that seemed to have some significance to it, did it not?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the leadership corner since Francona has been here. If you remember, Jason Giambi had his locker in that corner. Nick Swisher has obviously been there since he signed. And Brantley, for a while, he's been kind of in the opposite corner of the room, which fans who don't get a look inside the clubhouse, there are some large poles around the room, and some lockers are kind of hidden, and Brantley was kind of tucked away and out of sight. But now he's right there, visible in the middle of the room, you know, right kind of it's kind of a focal point of that clubhouse. I think that's important, you know, for him to kind of step up in that regard. And, you know, talking to Yan Gomes the other day, you know, when they made these trades or shortly before they were official, Francona and GM Chris Antonetti kind of called together the core group of players to kind of discuss the direction of the team and, you know, discuss leadership and expectations and kind of go over that stuff. But I think what was important about that was kind of this idea that, hey, this is the time for Brantley, Gomes, Kluber, Kipnis, these guys who may be a little young on experience, but this is their team now. It's clearly their team now that they've shed some of these veterans. And Yan Gomes said it himself. He said, it's time for us to take the reins. You know, they've invested a lot of money over a lot of years in these young guys over those extensions. And it's time for that to not only translate, you know, from on-the-field production, but in the clubhouse leadership, we've seen Kipnis take a big step forward in that regard. You know, Brantley and Kluber are very quiet, lead-by-example type guys. But, you know, I think you do hit on a good point there. They're putting Brantley, who is that lead-by-example type guy, putting him right there in that spot. I think that's a big move for the kind of the off-the-field internal workings of this team.
No more hiding, Dr. Smooth.
That's right.
No hiding, man. You're out in the open. We're going to be all over you now, us ugly reporters. I want to thank Jordan Bastian for joining us to talk about all that. A lot going on with the Indians, obviously, the last couple weeks, and there'll be a lot of intrigue moving forward. So be sure to tune into future podcasts. And I'm Anthony Cashman. Thanks for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.